Welcome back to Canna Week, brought to you by New Frontier Data, where we deliver the week's top headlines in cannabis and hear industry experts weigh in on the impact these stories have in the industry. I'm your host, Heather Wickline. Today's guest is internationally recognized as a leader in the field of cannabis genetics, VP of R&D for Front Range Biosciences, and the Chief Science Advisor to New Frontier Data. Please welcome Dr. Reggie Gaudino. Thank you for joining us today.
Hey, Heather. Thank you for having me.
Well, for anyone that missed it, the Global Cannabis Town Hall on April 2nd, Dr. Gaudino hosts the medical and science segment, so you can purchase a recording on newfrontierdata.com. So if you are at home, which most of us are, and have an extra, 8 or 9 hours to kill, there's a lot of great content for you. What did you think of the town hall, Reggie?
I thought it, I stuck around for a good part of it. I'd say maybe not all 9 hours since it started before the started here. I was fascinated by the level of interconnectedness, economy, research and the cannabis community in general is kind of coming together. Right? So there's a lot of good information. The science segment that I hosted was particularly robust, right? There was a lot of good stuff. Just because every time we answered a question, it kind of raised another point to discuss. We could have gone on for hours, right? So there was a lot of came out of it. And I think the good part was that everybody, to take home point was we need more research. We need more access and more research.
Absolutely. Well, we'll dive right in. I know all day, every day, we're talking about COVID-19, so we will get to that. But I did want to talk about an article that was published by the New York Times Magazine recently about cannabis scientists are chasing the perfect high. And it was discussed whether cannabis could be the next designer drug. Research shown that it's possible to grow cannabinoids from yeast, cutting out the need for horticulture completely. Yeah. And eliminating the source of variability, which is the plant themselves. So you don't have to worry about a number of factors like greenhouse, weather, insects. And then on the other side of that coin is the people argue that the entourage effect of the 500 plus different chemicals found in the plant can't be replicated in the lab. So I'd love to hear you weigh in on this because I wonder if this is an actual path that you could see happening and playing out in the future.
So there's a lot of different topics there. So I think the first way to approach that is to say the cannabis industry itself is going to, as it evolve into many new and different kind of sub-industries. And to a certain extent, the production of any, cannabinoid or terpene in yeast or bacteria is a viable option if you can get the cost equal to or less than that in itself. So for things like minor cannabinoids and things that are likely to be in lower quantities, that's an absolutely viable way to go down and to try to look at that. For things like THC and CBD, where you get such huge quantities from a plant, right? I don't know that they will ever be able to produce THC or CBD as efficiently in a test tube or in yeast as they will be in the plant by just, the traditional growth and then extraction, right? Just because the cost to produce per milligram or gram of THC per plant, when you're looking at spread over thousands of acres, that's a whole bunch of THC for not a lot of input other than the seed and some water, right? So, especially if you're going outdoors. So, I think that as the industry matures, you're going to see, we will evolve and there will be different niches that come forward, right? So, now the other way to approach this is, let's ask the question, what is full spectrum, right? So we talk about full spectrum. What does that mean? What is that definition? And I think that's ultimately the answer to the rest of the question because, there are 500 or more compounds and we don't measure all of them, can't measure many of them, and don't even know some of them exist, right? So at the end of the day, what does full spectrum mean? And if you can't measure it or don't know what you're looking for, how can you replicate it? right? So, so I think, you know, at some point, will it be able to replicate the plant? Yes, absolutely. Sometime down the line, you know, 5, 10, whatever years from now, when we have a good understanding of every one of the 500 compounds, we have a good understanding of what the ratio differences mean, right? Because that's the important part. It's not necessarily the absolute level, because absolute is dependent on growth, right? So if you have 100% of the plant material that's coming out, you know, in terms of the chemicals, you know, whether it's 100% of, you know, a really well-grown plant or it's 100% of a poorly grown plant, the ratios that are genetically defined will stay within certain parameters for some of the compounds. Other compounds like terpenes, right, are going to vary widely. And I think this is part of the other part of the question is, you know, getting rid of the plant variability. Well, you can get rid of the plant variability if you have a very strict growing regime that is very well controlled, in like some of the, you know, self-contained units and chambers that are being, you know, sold now, right? So Encan, which is a company that's been around for a long time, you know, shows that batch to batch, they can hit a certain target, right? It may not be like, you know, within 0.5% variation, but they have 3 or 4 products that, you know, this product comes in between 14 and 16% THC and 3 to 4% CBD. And every time they grow it, it comes in that range, right? So, and so there are things that we can do in the industry to help push us towards those kind of, you know, benchmarks. Mm-hmm. But until we have a better understanding of what full spectrum means, it will be hard to duplicate it any way other than in the plant.
Got it. Well, it seems like there needs to be a lot more research done. But from what this article was also saying is a lot of the bigger cannabis companies that have been in this, you know, race for this extremely, like this, I mean, the cannabis industry is going billions and billions of dollars. And it seems like they're all racing and they're really not sharing a lot of their research because they want to be the biggest, the best, the first. Do you think that will change?
No. because again, so this is almost, you know, you might as well ask the question, you know, do big pharma companies trade
exactly
their research, right? So, and you know, we're looking at the evolution of a new type of pharma, right? So this is maybe not big pharma, but this is ag pharma, right? So, and getting back to the designer drug thing. So yes, absolutely. Right. So by the proper breeding, you can absolutely tailor the experience, right? And with more understanding of what the terpenes actually do and what they mean, we'll get a better idea of how to predict some of that, right? So if we look, I mean, there's some evidence that terpenes travel in groups. Why, right? So, you know, are they traveling in a group because their original purpose was to elicit some sort of coordinated effect, right? So, and then how does that play in the human body, right? And with all the different terpenes that we have, there is the opportunity to, as we get better understanding, quote unquote, get designer cannabis, right? So, and in some very real respect, you know, this is the path towards personalized cannabis medicine, right? So because everybody's endocannabinoid system is a little bit different, and so your mileage may vary from strain to strain from somebody else's. And it's in that kind of knowledge gathering and personal experience where you'll see that you do end up with a personalized cannabis medicine, and the designer drug may actually be, you know, not necessarily, you know, one size fits all anyway. So,
yeah. Well, that'll be interesting. I'm excited to see what comes out of that. But as promised, we are going to move on to coronavirus and cannabis. And right now, it seems like misinformation in this arena is spreading faster than the virus. I'm sure you've seen, I mean, especially on social media and people trying to sell and advertise, there's claims that cannabis can be used to treat and even cure COVID-19. They're just everywhere on the internet. And Washington Post recently reported that and stated clearly that no, it is not a miracle cure. And in fact, these claims really fly in the face of current science. What are your thoughts when you see claims like this?
Well, it really bothers me.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Because, you know, it does a number of things. First of all, it hurts the credibility of the industry, right? So already, you know, we've seen the FDA, you know, come down on the industry and start to issue letters about making medical claims or health benefit claims from CBD, right? So this clearly flies in the face of that, right? So, you know, if they told us not to do it for other things, cancer or whatever, you know, why are we doing it now for COVID-19 without any clinical evidence? It also, you know, strikes as in some cases snake oil salesmen, or at the very least, sensationalist kind of headline pandering, right? So, because go ahead, sorry.
Oh no, I was going to say, I think even before this COVID-19 outbreak, you know, CBD was very, people were very suspect of it being, you know, a snake oil. And now with this outbreak and all these claims that they're going, this is like a cure, it seems like it's really hurting the credibility even more.
Exactly, right? So, and it's exactly that kind of stuff that makes the FDA and, you know, the government pull back from wanting to engage in real research and clinical trials, right? So, because if, you know, even though, you know, we need it desperately, right, the harder we try to shove, you know, cannabinoids in general down everyone's throat as the cure for everything, right, you know, the worse it will be for us trying to get taken seriously in the industry, right? So doctors, when they see, you know, CBD cures everything, you know, that to them, that's the stoner culture, right? So it's not helping us in any way, shape, or form, right? And then, you know, it can be downright harmful, right? So let's talk about COVID-19 specifically, right? So especially after, you know, the WHO and the CDC, right, both came out and said, well, stay away from anti-inflammatories, right? So, you know, anti-inflammatories were hurting the response process because, you know, we needed the inflammation associated with disease response to be able to help combat the virus. So anti-inflammatories, which shut down that cascade system, right, are not helping. Well, CBD is an anti-inflammatory, right? So further, it's not exactly like every other anti-inflammatory we normally take, like ibuprofen or...
is what that article was referring to, is the use of ibuprofen. Yeah.
And even aspirin to a certain extent, right? So they said Tylenol was okay. And so, you know, viruses are an interesting thing. And so is the human body and how the human body responds, right? So there are viruses that cause systemic inflammation as a route to easing their mode of infection from cell to cell. Then, right, there are those viruses that don't do that. Well, as it turns out, COVID-19, and let me go further, right? So in the first case, right, where if it's a situation where the virus causes inflammation, then you absolutely want to use anti-inflammatories and tamp the system down. Absolutely. That will make it harder for that virus to spread. And in certain cases, we know there are certain viruses like that. So, for instance, human, you know, HIV. Some of those viruses cause inflammation, and by controlling it, and you know, we can help ease that. Other viruses don't cause inflammation, and in the body's response to those viruses is to cause inflammation, right? So, fight, right? So to mobilize the defenses. So, COVID-19, as it turns out, was not the first type of virus. It was the second type of virus, which is why they said to stay away from anti-inflammatories. And so, you know, if you start to say, you know, take CBD or THCA, right, which is also anti-inflammatory, you know, without having an understanding of the system, then you actually make it worse, right? So by using anti-inflammatory, you are actually inhibiting the likelihood the person will recover. You know, and these things happen because of second messenger systems. Now, this is the system in the body that signals between different, like, kind of, you know, expression responses, right? So you can have you know, if you can have an antigen response, like an allergen, and it'll trigger a certain part of your second messenger system, and it might, you know, and you might get some, you know, neutrophils, you might get some, you know, the NF kappa beta system, or, you know, other immune responses. You might get, if it's a cancer, you'll get other things that will act through a MAPK system, and it'll turn on apoptosis and stuff like that. Right? So these are systems that are interconnected, but carry out specific functions in the cell. And there's some crosstalk between these systems, and it's called a second messenger or cascade system, right? There are key trigger points. And as it turns out, right, cannabinoids can interact with these second messenger systems directly, right? And that's how, in general, the endocannabinoid system maintains homeostasis in the body by keeping all these systems in check, right? Well, that means that, you know, and that's with our endocannabinoids. Phytocannabinoids, you know, THC, CBD, other ones, can touch some of these systems, and we can trigger response. And by taking CBD or THC, that's what we're actually doing in disease response, right? We're actually triggering some of these systems. You've heard people talk about CBD being used to trigger the apoptosis system, and that's why it's good for cancer and so on and so forth, right? So you know, these are very intricate systems, and we don't understand fully how the cannabinoids play into these systems. And so it's possible, by trying to trigger these systems, and this is where the misinformation comes from, right? So they go into the scientific literature and they find what is, you know, early research and perfectly valid statements that say CBD has been shown to inhibit viral replication for a particular virus. But they don't tell you about the particular virus. They tell you that CBD inhibits viral replication, period. That's where they cut it off, and that's the headline, right?
And that's why a little knowledge is dangerous.
Exactly, right? So,
yep.
And that's where it becomes very dangerous, because if somebody reads that who's not, you know, who isn't, especially a newbie to the field, mm-hmm. somebody new to cannabis and somebody just getting on the bandwagon, they go, they see that, and they take it, or worse yet, they give it to a loved one, and that person is not helped by that treatment, and they die. What does that do to the industry?
It's going to put a lot of hurt on it, for sure. Well, just, I mean, what you mentioned, some, you know, clinical need for clinical trials, and, you know, another report on mugglehead.com was talking about Toronto-based Catalog. They have applied to Health Canada to conduct clinical trials to see if CBD can reduce COVID-19 symptoms. And actually, you were mentioned in the article as an advocate for research into this. Could you touch on some facts about the antiviral, anti-inflammatory effects of cannabis? And not maybe not just CBD, but is there any kind of interaction with THC that's specific or outside of that?
So all of the cannabinoids, THC, you know, and when I say THC, CBD, I mean the acid forms as well, right? So THCA, THC, CBG, CBC, all of these have so far been shown to have some efficacy in some tests somewhere, whether it be cancer. Some of them are against, inflammation specifically. Some of them have been shown to, you know, THCV in particular, work against things like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's. We already know that THCV is also the skinny wonder drug, right? Because it reduces appetite, right? It also, ironically, helps with some diabetes, just as CBD has been shown. So a number of cannabinoids.
I think we're all going to need some of that skinny cannabinoid after this lockdown.
Exactly, right? Exactly. Right? So it's funny how you can't find toilet paper or other paper goods, but you can find all the junk food you want.
Yeah. It's not good. I need social distancing from my refrigerator badly. Sorry to keep going.
That was so funny. I actually lost my train of thought there.
Talking about the you were talking about their antiviral and anti-inflammatory effects.
Oh, right. So so these effects are triggered by what I mentioned before, the second messenger system, right? Because now you're mobilizing specific defenses, like in the term in cancer, right? So you're mobilizing the entire process that is called programmed cell death, because which also means that other aspects are being triggered, which bring in things like the natural killer cells and some of these other, you know, other immune cells like macrophages and things like that, that are helpful, right, in controlling things that, you know, are awry in the system, right? And remember, it's particularly difficult because cancer has found a way to fool the system, right? Because it is recognized itself, but it's out of control, right? So, and somehow, right, you know, through a triggering of the second messenger systems, we are able to mobilize defenses to catch those things before they get too bad, right? So, and to the point where, you know, they've shown, you know, for glioblastoma, THC, you know, perfusion, and I forget how much it was able to stop the growth of the tumor, you know, dead in its tracks, right? At least in vitro. So, and that's the other caveat, right? A lot of these studies are not clinical trials. They're not done in human. They're done in either animal models or they're done in a test tube or in cell culture, right? So there needs to be still on top of that, you know, another layer of safety. So now that we know it works on an animal or in a test tube, is it safe for a human, right? That's the whole clinical trial aspect, right? So, but in some places, you look in other places outside the United States, and this is maybe where our medical system is a little bit bloated. You look at places like Israel, right? So Israel, and this is ironic, right? So prescribes high alpha pinene flower for inhalation to those who have asthma. It's kind of an oxymoron, right? Right. But it's not, because alpha pinene is a terpene, a small molecule that comes out of cannabis and other things that you know, acts as a bronchodilator. It opens up the capacity to breathe deeper and to carry more oxygen, right? So, which is exactly what you need in somebody with asthma, right? So, and you know, it's akin to, you know, if you walk into a pine forest and you take a deep breath and you get that nice piney smell, right? Well, but you're actually, if you were to measure your lung capacity before and after walking into that pine forest, you'd see that after walking to the pine forest, you are actually breathing in more air. Your lung capacity increased because of the bronchodilation.
Interesting. I know, I think we've been trying to, I've been seeing little trends on, whether the combustibles are going to go down amidst this COVID-19, since it's such a respiratory disease, and wondering if edibles will be, you know, increasing in the cannabis industry rather than anything that's, you know, smokable flower and stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no denying the fact that, you know, smoking in general, right, is bad for the lungs. Right. So, and inhalation of any kind, even vaporization, still, even if you're not getting particulate matter, you're still putting fairly hot air into your lungs, which is not necessarily the best thing. Right. So, you know, so there's something to be said for edibles in certain cases. Right. So not to mention the fact that, to be quite honest, right, if we're talking about cancer therapy and other therapies, there's no way you're getting enough cannabinoid into your lungs from smoking. It's just not happening, mm-hmm. right? So realistically, as a pharmaceutical industry, the industry will have to become more comfortable with ingested, like, you know, oils, mm-hmm. or edibles or pills, tablets, that kind of thing, right? To get the dosage effect, right? So even if you are, you know, I mean, you can take fairly concentrated oils, right? So to get to those doses, but it's not being smoked, right? Your lung capacity cannot take in enough to make your blood carry enough to combat cancer. So,
well, that is all really interesting. Well, it sounds like we all just have to be very cautious of any of the misinformation floating around there, and hopefully this won't have an effect on, you know, the industry as a whole and CBD research, and, you know, hopefully getting more in-depth research into the industry. But I think that pretty much wraps it up for today. Thank you so much for joining us here today.
It's been my pleasure. No, it was really, really quite an interesting talk. I mean, if I could say one more thing about,
of course, you know, of course,
about,
please,
about the state of the industry, right? So, you know, there are, you know, we talk about the 500 compounds in cannabis, right? But realistically, you know, the only compounds that really get any real due are the cannabinoids and the terpenes, right? So we have so many other, you know, biologically relevant compound classes. And I say it that way because, you know, things like anthocyanins, right? They're antioxidants, right? So, you know, so they're the kind of thing we call superfoods, right? Mm-hmm. You know, hemp protein is one of the most brutally nutritious proteins on the planet. It has a better distribution of amino acids or at the same as lamb or beef, like literally pound for pound. Hemp protein is as nutritious for you and healthy for you and healthier for you than meat, right? And then we come into, like, you know, these genes that we don't even understand. So there's a whole class of genes, you know, and I think there was recently, I guess a couple months ago, there was a new compound there was THCP, but then there was another one that got less publicity because it wasn't a THC derivative, but it was called CBSA. And that's actually not even a cannabinoid, right? It looks like it, but it's not. And those things are made in the plant at fairly high levels, right? They're alkaloids. A lot of the other drugs that we understand, opioids, caffeine, those things, those are all alkaloids, right? So there's a compound of stuff in cannabis that people don't even really understand is there, right? Like, so we have so far to go with this plant, and there's so much to learn still. And we may still find that there are miraculous compounds and drugs that come out of this plant that we don't even know exist yet. So yes, we do need more research.
Well, that's exciting stuff. Exciting stuff. Alrighty. Well, thank you again for joining us. Please be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast and check out New Frontier Data's Cannabite for more in-depth coverage and the global cannabis industry and Equio for industry-leading data and intelligence services. I'm your host, Heather Wickline. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next week. New Frontier Data provides this podcast for entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated in this podcast should be taken as legal or financial advice. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by the company. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by New Frontier Data employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the company or any of its officials. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact our legal department.